Namaste. We'll start with the prayer. Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Paryantam Vande Guru Paramparam Om. So, today we will be dealing with Bhakti Yoga, and also if possible we will do a little bit of preparation for self-inquiry, right? The prerequisites required. Before we get into the topic for the day, I just thought it will be very useful for us to do a quick recap of what we've done so far, especially under the yoga category, right? So we started out with what is yoga, what do we mean by yoga, and we said that, you know, it actually connects the sadhaka with the sadhyam. That means the person who is a seeker with the sought, right? That is yoga. Now in yoga we said there are three types of yoga: karma yoga, upasana yoga and jnana yoga, right? And we talked about the different yogas in detail. So what I'm going to attempt today, before I get into the subject, is a very, very quick recap. Karma yoga is proper action with proper attitude, right? Karma yoga is proper action with proper attitude. And we saw that in terms of proper action, actions are categorized based on their spiritual influence only. So, uttama karmani are those karmas which will lead to lead you closer to the spiritual goal, because they are good in terms of, you know, creating chitta shuddhi as well as progressing towards moksha purushartha. Madhyama karmani are those that you undertake to do for your own personal interest, family, your own furthering of your profession, career, etc. And they are to be discouraged for a true karma yogi, but they are called madhyama karmani, and adhama karmani are ones which will cause spiritual downfall. So the uttama karmani will lead to spiritual upliftment, madhyama karmani will lead to spiritual stagnation, adhama karmani will actually lead you to spiritual downfall. Right? These were the three based on the actions. And then we also saw Pancha Mahayajna, the five different types of karma yoga, five different types of yajna that we can all do towards, uttama karmani. Basically, the sankalpa itself should be towards loka kshemartham. Only then it will be classified under uttama karmani. And under each of the five categories, depending on the sankalpa, it can go towards your chitta shuddhi, or it can take you towards your spiritual goal, which is moksha. Basically, you can do all the five yajnas with the sankalpa saying, whatever I am doing is for the loka kshemartham and sarve janaha sukino bhavantu. And that way your entire Ishwararpana bhava, the whole puja becomes very sacred and they become uttama karmani. The same thing if you change the sankalpa and say that it is for, you know, the longevity of yourself or for your children's benefit, their education, their marriage, etc. It is termed as sakama karmani, and therefore it will come under madhyama karmani. So I just wanted to clarify this also. So the five types of yajnas can be done based on the action. It can be done either as uttama karmani or madhyama karmani. And then I also talked about bhavana or attitude. I said the action itself can be done with Ishwararpana bhavana, and the result, whatever you get out of the karma, we take it with reverence as Ishwara prasada, right? And we take whatever Ishwara prasada comes with equanimity. So what happens is it leads to samatvam or equanimity, and samatvam will lead very, very quickly to what we call chitta shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi is nothing but mental refinement, because we need mental refinement to sharpen our mind so that it is ready to gather the knowledge that we will be gathering through Jnana Yoga. So this is Karma Yoga. Then after this, we went on to Upasana Yoga, right? Upasana Yoga is a scheme which is meant to make our personality fit for the accomplishment of all the four goals, right? So our scriptures divide our personality into several layers for ease of handling, which we will see during the Tattva Bodha class. Hopefully next class we will be seeing Shariratrayam, Panchakosha, etc. But however, for the purpose of Upasana Yoga, we need to condition three aspects: Kaikam, Vachikam and Manasam. So we saw that the personality condition program must take care of Kaika, Vachika and Manasa. Kaika is what we do, Vachika is what we speak, and Manasa is what we think, right? So we need to condition all the three aspects for getting ready for Upasana Yoga, because if these three are not conditioned, it is very difficult for us to indulge in meditation thereafter. Then we talked about four types of meditation. I spoke about relaxation meditation, concentration meditation. In concentration meditation, we spoke about taking any Manasa Puja, could be your Madha Manasa Puja related to your Ishta Devata, and then focusing on that for 5 minutes, 10 minutes just after relaxation meditation. Expansion meditation is the third type of meditation where you learn to focus on Vishwarupa Ishvara, that is nature, sky, moon, stars, etc. as God, and you meditate on that. This helps in your seeing yourself as an insignificant or small person compared to the vast expanse or universe. So that is where the expansion meditation helps. And the fourth one I told you was value meditation. You might recall that I spoke about Daivi Sampath, how we need to create the Daivi Sampath, which is listed in Gita. And for that, value meditation helps. We can sort of focus on one value at a time, whichever each one of us feels we need to work on. It could be removal of anger, it could be removal of fear, or it can be improving our focusing capacity. It can be any of these. So values, there are a whole lot of values which was listed, and you can study about it more in Gita. There are several chapters in Gita which speak about these. Okay. And then after this, I also spoke about integration or arjavam, right? Arjavam is nothing but making sure that the body, sense organs and mind function as a team. Because this integration is very important, otherwise we will have a cross purpose. The different sense organs will work at cross purpose. I also talked about how every time we lie and our mind says, as a Karma Yogi and Upasana Yogi, the mind says you're not supposed to lie, you will have a speech and mind conflict. So we're talking about how it is important for all the sense organs to function together in an integrated manner, right? So Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga both go together. So we spoke about that, right? And then we went on to Jnana Yoga. We talked a lot about Jnana Yoga, the Pramanams, the Prameyams, etc. But today I'm not going to the details of Jnana Yoga again, but under Jnana Yoga, it is important for us to remember that there are three aspects of Jnana Yoga: Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam. Shravanam broadly is the study of the scriptures, right? Under a competent life guru in a consistent and systematic manner for a length of time. It cannot be sporadic, right? One day you just listen and then after 1 month you come back, etc. That doesn't work. This is exactly like you undertake a curriculum in a college. We do a systematic study, and under a competent and live guru. The second aspect is Mananam. Mananam is for us to reflect and think about what we have learned and see if there are any conflicts anywhere, seeming conflicts, and try and resolve these doubts in our mind. We are free to ask our guru if we have some doubts and get them clarified during this time. Generally, at the end of Shravanam itself, when I say end, after length of time, you will not have doubts because the scripture study is always in Guru Shishya Samvada style, and therefore you will really not have any doubts by the time you come to Mananam. In Nididhyasanam, we have studied something, we have Samshaya Jnanam, we don't have any doubts, but we need to make sure that we assimilate the teaching so that our behavior, our mind, our thoughts, everything is aligned to the teaching that we have gathered, right? So Nididhyasanam is for that. So in Nididhyasanam, we make use of the already conditioned or meditative mind that we have acquired through Upasana Yoga and Karma Yoga, and we reinforce Aham Brahmasmi thought in different forms during Nididhyasanam. So when we undertake Nididhyasanam and we go through some of the scriptural parts which talk about the Mahavakyam, etc., and repeatedly dwell upon it and assimilate, that is referred to as Nididhyasanam. So that is the Jnana Yoga part. Now today, we will be moving into Bhakti Yoga, which is very, very important, and we will see how Bhakti Yoga fits into all of the other yogas also. Okay? Now, this is a very, very important topic in the scriptures, and it's slightly confusing also because we should clearly understand what Bhakti is. The word Bhakti is used in the scriptures in two different meanings, right? One is Bhakti as devotion towards God. Okay, Bhakti as devotion towards God, which is nothing but love directed towards a higher principle. So when love is directed towards some principle which we revere, which is sacred, then that love is called devotion. Reverential love can be defined as devotion. We talk about Matri Bhakti, we talk about Pitri Bhakti, we talk about Guru Bhakti, Ishwara Bhakti, Desha Bhakti, etc. Right? Now, scriptures basically point out that all forms of love that a human being entertains is directly towards only three things, right? All forms of love can be towards three things. First is goals, right? Whatever goals we want to accomplish in life, or whatever ends that we want to accomplish. Okay? Love of the end itself is the first one, right? The second one is the means that we use to accomplish the end. That is love of the means, right? And the third one is love of oneself, right? Therefore, all forms of love are only under these three categories. Means love, end love, and self love, right? Just bear with me for a minute. I'll explain the connection, right? And then, subsequently, you also have a gradation in terms of intensity, right? When you look at the intensity of the love of oneself is the highest, the love of the ends is the second, and love of the means is the third. Now, this is very, very, when it comes to you as a slide like this, it's very shocking. But once you sort of understand and relate, you're able to get this better. For example, we often hear stories that elderly rich people are very sincerely served by family members, right? And you know that this person is cared for, etc. But what happens is, after the person gives away the property, the jewelry, etc., we find that person is no longer cared for in the house. It happens in some cases. So this actually shows that the love of the means to achieve the end wealth, right, is secondary. So that is the third one. Love of the means becomes the third one in terms of intensity. So the first one is love of oneself. What do I get? Second, love of the end. That is the wealth. And third, love of the means is the parents or the grandparents or whoever is leaving that property. Love of the means to achieve that wealth, right? So this is actually said even in Bhajagovindam. You might recall this. So long as a man is fit and able to support his family, see what affection all those around him show. But no one at home cares to even have a word with him when his body totters due to old age. Which one is this? Now, This one is Yavad Vitto Parjana Sakta Stavan Nijaparivaro Raktaha Pasha Jivati Jarjara Dehe Vartam Kopina Pritchati Gehe. Right? Now, this is what is said by Shankaracharya so many centuries back, right? Now, most of the time, love for people is purely love as a means to accomplish the end, right? Now, between the love for the end and love for oneself, right, which love is superior, right? If you logically analyze, I love various ends not for the sake of the end itself. I love various ends hoping that they will give me comfort, security and happiness, right? It is for my benefit, it is for my comfort, my security, my happiness that I love various ends, right? Now, the moment I see that particular end does not give me joy, then the end is either changed or even after accomplishing the end, it is disposed of, right? Now, this is a very, very important point that the Shastras also repeat, right? Now, if you see in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, right, it is said, Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati, nava are pachyu kamaya pati priyo bhavati, Atmanastu kamaya pati priyo bhavati. Right? The Upanishad says, it's very shocking. Nobody loves the husband for husband's sake. Everybody loves the husband for one's own sake. And it repeats, Upanishad extends this to the wife, to the children, to everyone. Right? Now, just step back a minute and apply this to the field of God, right? If we have bhakti or if a person loves God, what will be the intensity of that love? The scriptures point out that the intensity of love depends upon how you look upon God. Now, because different people look at God in different ways, the way you look upon God will determine the intensity of love. Now, we saw love of the end, love of the means, we saw love of the self, right? Now, the way we look upon God, under which category we look upon God, determines the intensity of love, right? So, bhakti towards God, the bhavana, determines this. So, the intensity will depend on how we look upon God. Means for various worldly ends is manda bhakti. So, the means for various worldly ends, which is, you know, I want this, I want that, I will give you something in return for my prayer, that is manda bhakti. God in itself, God herself or himself as an end or goal becomes madhyama bhakti. God as non-different from myself becomes uttama bhakti. Right? Very, very important. Now, the people can have different reasons as to why they look at each one of these, right? Now, first one is very clear. If I go to the temple and I worship God saying, give me this, give me that is manda bhakti, right? This is majority. There's a next set of people who are little rare, who look upon God not as a means for various ends. They are mature, right? Mature enough and their understanding of God is clearer, that they are able to choose God as the end of life, right? Because they know God represents security. God represents peace. God represents happiness. So once I understand God as a symbolic representation of peace, love and happiness, and I know that everyone in life is seeking security and happiness, and once I know God represents this, naturally my love for this God as the end becomes very, very intense. This is Madhyama Bhakti. Right? Whereas, Uttama Bhakti is God as non-different from myself. This is really, really superior form of Bhakti, Soham Asmi. So, most of what the Mahavakyams talk about, and before that when you meditate upon, right, and we talk of Aikyam, etc., or the Jnani Bhakta, for example, we will come to who a Jnani Bhakta is after we do one or two more classes. Uttama Bhakti is Bhakti where you love God as non-different from yourself, right? So, that is Uttama Bhakti, right? So, this is the first facet of Bhakti. That is, the Bhavana is either Manda Bhakti, Madhyama Bhakti or Uttama Bhakti, right? Now, the second facet of Bhakti is Bhakti Yoga, which is a course of discipline, right? meant to accomplish the highest goal of life, namely moksha or freedom, right? So, in fact, in Gita, you will see in this 14:23, Mamcha Yogyabhicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samati Chaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. He who worships me alone through the yoga of unswerving devotion becomes fit to attain the nature of Brahman by going beyond these gunas. We will see, talk about the three gunas, and we will definitely see how, you know, when you transcend the gunas, you will be able to achieve Brahman, right? And that is the that is what is conveyed in this Gita in 12th chapter, right? And the 12th chapter itself of the Gita is called Bhakti Yoga, right? Therefore, the suffix yoga indicates bhakti as a course of discipline. Now, the next question is, what is Bhakti Yoga? What course of discipline is indicated by this word Bhakti Yoga? If you remember, we dealt with the courses of discipline, and we also talked about Purushartha, human goals being achieved by Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga, and then Jnana Yoga also, right? Now, Bhakti Yoga is not an exclusive course of discipline at all, right? It is in and through all the three yogas. So, if you want to put it in another way, you can say Bhakti Yoga comprises of Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga and Jnana Yoga. That's one way of putting it. Or you can say Karma Yoga Rupa Bhakti Yoga, Upasana Yoga Rupa Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga Rupa Bhakti Yoga. Then the next question will be, why do you call these three then commonly as Bhakti Yoga, right? Why don't you treat it as separate fourth yoga? Because Bhakti Yoga is a common atmosphere in which all these three have to be practiced, right? So Karma Yoga has to be imbued with Bhakti. Upasana Yoga should be soaked in Bhakti. Jnana Yoga must float in Bhakti, right? Like Swamiji says, it's like rasgulla in that syrup, right? Each of these yogas have to be soaked in bhakti, right? Therefore, for instance, there's nothing called secular karma yoga at all, as Swami Dayananda Saraswati puts it, right? Karma yoga should necessarily have bhakti all the time, because every action of mine is dedicated to the Lord, right? Now, as I said, all three yogas must be soaked in bhakti. Now, if you take Upasana Yoga, Manasa Japa that we saw about, that also must have bhakti. And if you take Jnana Yoga, right, before study of scriptures, we pray to God. Now, if you take any of the Vedas, any of the Shantipathas, you will see that you pray to God, saying, please give me good health, please give me good sensory perception, sense organs, let my relationship with my guru be nice. Any of them, whether it is Sahanavavatu or whether it is Bhadram Karnevi, any of these, right, comes with a prayer to God. And even when we are inquiring into our real nature, we are discovering the identity of our real nature with the nature of God. Now, self-realization or discovery is nothing but God discovery, right? Therefore, Jnana Yoga, which involves self-discovery, is none other than God discovery. Therefore, Jnana Yoga also involves bhakti. Therefore, at no time this person is away from bhakti. Therefore, all three yogas put together is called Bhakti Yoga, right? Now, so the two facets of Bhakti, the first love of God in the form of Manda Bhakti, Madhyama Bhakti and Uttama Bhakti, and the second one means a course of discipline to attain the spiritual goal consisting of Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga and Jnana Yoga, right? So, these are the two different facets of bhakti, right? Now, this discussion itself will not be complete if we do not talk about God, who is the object of our love, right? So, who is God? We are going to see three different aspects of God, right? Now, first one is Jagat Karta Ishvara. We present a simple and easy understandable reason, right? Any well-designed product must have an intelligent creator, right? Simple. The theory is very simple. Therefore, the world is such a beautiful place. The universe is so beautiful. So, there must be an intelligent being behind it to design it, right? Now, whenever you buy a new product, you know that somebody has created this product, right? Similarly, you can visualize God as a person, and we say that the God is a intelligent being who has created this world, and he is omniscient, he is omnipotent. Still, we don't see him, right? We don't see him near us. So therefore, what happens? We think he is there, sitting somewhere in the cloud, right? So we visualize God as a person because we are used to intelligent beings as human beings. So we can connect God with a person immediately. Then we imagine a very, very intelligent God who is omnipotent, and we do. And since we don't see him around, we think he is omniscient and omnipotent. Then we also place him safely above the clouds, right? Saying he's somewhere there, Lord as creator, as a personal God. He has a special form, a name, Rama, Krishna, Vishnu, Shiva, etc. Right? So this is Ekarupa Ishvara with a specific form, right? We have God who have four heads, who have five heads, six heads, so many hands, but we have a Rupa, Ekarupa Ishvara, who is Jagat Karta Ishvara. We refer to this as the Nimitta Karanam of the universe. We will see more about this as we go into next two sessions. So, Jagat Karta Ishvara is the first one, right? Second one is Jagat Karanam Ishvara. Once you have grown up sufficiently, right, and you are capable of thinking further, the scriptures present the next level of Ishvara, right? What is that? God is the cause of the world. That means God suppose I understand God as creator of the world, invariably we will ask, where did the raw material come from? So, because any creator, say carpenter, can create, say, a chair only if there is wood, right? Suppose if I understand God as the creator of the whole world, and then we ask, where is the raw material? We have to clarify that God alone was there and nothing else, right? And God created everything starting from even space, right? In Taittiriya Upanishad, you can see that tasmadva etasmad atmana akasha sambhuta, right? Starting with space, and then panchabhutas got created. We will be speaking about panchabhutas when we get into the subject of creation. So God has produced the raw material as well as the God has created the world, and he is the creator, right? So God alone was there. God created space, and before Big Bang we cannot even talk of time and space. This is known even by science. God himself happens to be the very material also out of which the world is made, and the example given is spider in Mundaka Upanishad, right? There is a verse 117, Yator Nanabihi Sujate Grihate Cha. Spider example is given where it is speaking about the way the spider goes about creating the web from its own material that it secretes. God has created the world, right? So the whole universe is nothing but God alone. So he is no more a personal God. You have already moved him to the next plane, from a personal Eka Ishvara to Aneka Rupa Ishvara or Vishwarupa Ishvara, right? So that is Ishvara or Vishwarupa Ishvara. He is available everywhere in nature, right? You can meditate, as I said, expansion meditation meditates upon God as Vishwarupa Ishvara, right? Now, the next one is Jagat Adhishthanam Ishvara, right? This is slightly even more, you know, the next higher plane. Now, God has created everything in this world, good things as well as bad things. The mosquitoes, the octopus, the dinosaurs, as well as the human beings, right? So, you will ask, you know, how can I accept that God, bad also is God and God is everything, right? Then, we are ready for the third definition, which is God does not become the world, but God appears as the world with different forms, not affected by any form in which he appears, right? God appears as the world in a variety of forms, not affected by the forms in which he appears. To put it differently, God is the substratum of all the forms or the entire creation which he transcends. God is the ultimate reality. Jagat Adhishtanam Ishvara is the ultimate substratum, right? So God transcends all the superficial forms of creation, and there is no particular form belonging to God, and therefore this Adhishtana Ishvara is Arupa Ishvara, right? So let us now consolidate, right? In Sanskrit, we say God is Jagat Karta, Jagat Karanam first, Jagat Karta first, Jagat Karanam at the second level, and Jagat Adhishtanam in the third level. In English, God creates the world, first stage, right? And then God creates the world, God becomes the world, and then God is appearing as the world, right? That's the third stage of understanding. First stage is God creates the world, second stage is God becomes the world, and third stage is God appears as the world, right? So this one is also talked about in Kathopanishad. And at this, the third stage, God appears as the world. This is, you know, the Brahman definition, and this starts, merging. And therefore, in Kathopanishad, if you see Brahman, right, is defined as Ashabdam, Asparsham, Arupam, Avyayam, right? And whole lot of definitions around Brahman. So, Arupa Ishvara at that stage is Brahman, right? God as Arupa Ishvara. That is the final level of Ishvara itself, right? So, to sum it all, just remember God creating the world, God becoming the world, and God appearing as the world finally, right? Now, consolidating the nine forms. Now, I've attempted to put together this 3x3 matrix. I haven't tried it earlier. I'm just going to check if this appeals to many of you more, right? Now, bhavana-wise, we have Manda Bhavana, Madhyama Bhavana, and Uttama Bhavana we saw. Sadhana-wise, we said Karma Yoga Rupa, Upasana Yoga Rupa, and Jnana Yoga Rupa. And Devata-wise, we saw Eka Rupa, Aneka Rupa, and Arupa, right? Now, when a person is, say, religious and starting out on this journey, right, your bhavana is generally manda bhavana, right? Because you are more bothered about what you can get immediately for yourself. You pray because you have been conditioned like that in the religious realm, right? And then you do some amount of karma yoga. You do a little bit of manasa japa, maybe upasana yoga. And generally your prayer is to one ishta devata, right? I am not saying that 100% of people will fall under this category. I am just attempting to make a path for spiritual progress. So from here, what happens? After you got a little bit of awareness of Jnana Yoga, right, and Shravanam, then your Manda Bhakti, you start reducing to the extent of stopping it, right? And then from Eka Rupa, you start moving towards Aneka Rupa. And why Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga Rupa and Madhyama Bhavana are in green is that you start, your sankalpam starts undergoing a change, saying, okay, Sarve Jana Sukhino Bhavantu, my family is also included in the world, so let me start praying for the world at large, right? Then you start a little bit of Uttama Bhavana and Jnana Yoga Rupa Sadhana, as well as you are looking at Aneka Rupa. Then from here on, slowly you will see that you will reduce Manda, Madhyama and Eka Rupa Devata kind of bhakti and slowly start moving towards Uttama Bhavana, Jnana Yoga Rupa and Arupa Devata bhakti. Right? And finally, if you see, there is the Jnanis, etc. will undertake more of Jnana Yoga Rupa sadhana, Uttama Bhavana, Bhakti and Arupa Devata, and they will also do a little bit of Karma Yoga because they want to do Karma Yoga for Loka Kshemartham. They will do prayers, they will have rituals, they will have Shivaratri Puja, they will do Abhishekam, even Jnani will do all this. The greatest of Shankaracharya still undertake 4-hour Puja, 5-hour Puja in Sringeri Math and in Shankaramath, etc. because that is for Loka Kshemartham. So this is a summary kind of slide which you may want to use, or it's not compulsory also. I just thought I'll put this down for you, right? Now, I'm going to be starting on self-inquiry now, and I will preparation for self-inquiry. I'll take the questions after I complete this. Okay. Now that we have completed the four different types of yoga, this is a subject which is generally not dealt with in standard scriptural texts in the way that it was presented by Swamiji and what I presented. Now, Bhagavad Gita is the only text that actually takes care of all that was covered till now, which is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Upasana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. Otherwise, generally, the way the Purva Bhaga takes care of the rituals and Upasanas, etc., and the Upanishads and the Veda Anta Bhaga talk more about, the Jnana Yoga part for Shravanam, etc. So, Tattva Bodha is actually a text, right, which focuses only on Jnana Yoga. That is why I didn't do too much of Jnana Yoga in the earlier topics. Now, this book focuses totally on Jnana Yoga, right? And it presents the method of self-inquiry in a very, very systematic manner, right? And what it does is, it explains all the technical terms needed for further Shravanam, right? So, if you want to undertake a study of, say, Upanishads or Gita, you will need to know certain technical terms. For instance, take a game of cricket. Now, if you don't know what is LBW, what is gully, what is silly point. Now, if you go to the match in any language, if you hear, you will not be able to relate to it. Similarly, you need to have some technical terms before you undertake a study of any of these scriptures. Tattva Bodha attempts to present those technical terms in addition to presenting the method of self-inquiry itself, right? So, it is really a very, very good text that way, because it is not too big, not too small, and it presents all the paribhasha or technical terms in a very, very neat and comprehensive way. So, it serves two purposes. One is the method of self-inquiry, and the second one is the technical terms. Now, this book was written by Shankaracharya. Now, some people say it was written by Adi Shankara himself. There are some others who say it was not Adi Shankara, but one of the Shankaracharyas coming in that parampara, right? Now, whatever it is, any Shankaracharya in the parampara, we refer only as Shankaracharya. And this has been written by a great Acharya. It's a small book in prose form, right? So, except the first and last verse, the entire book is in prose form. Now, what we are going to be doing is attempting to see the meaning of Tattva Bodha. We are going to be using only English, not Sanskritam, because that will become too complex for an introductory course. So, we will be taking out the important terms that are required for anybody to pursue a serious Shravanam a little bit, but mostly the explanation is only going to be in English. Wherever possible, I will definitely introduce the Sanskritam definition also. Right? Now, the first thing that we will see today is preparatory disciplines, right? Now, what are the preparatory qualifications or disciplines required for self-inquiry? This is the first topic that is presented in Tattva Bodha, right? Now, we need to understand this, because even science, if you have to say do a post-graduation, you need to be a graduate, right? So, otherwise you need to have an entrance exam, right? Even in sports, it is the case. So, similarly, for undertaking a scriptural study, there are certain qualifications required. And those qualifications are termed as sadhana chatushtayam. Fourfold qualification called sadhana chatushtayam. Vivekaha, discrimination. Viragaha, dispassion. Mumukshutvam, desire for moksha, and shamadhi shatka sampattihi, which is discipline or sixfold discipline, right? Now, we will see each one of these briefly, right? The first one is Vivekaha or discrimination, right? Now, what is Vivekaha, right? Now, it is not used in a derogatory manner. It's not, you know, we have these gender discrimination, racial discrimination, etc. It's not that at all. The meaning is discernment, right? What discernment are we talking about? Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. That means understanding what is permanent and what is impermanent in this world, right? If you look at the universe, we discover one fact. The whole world of creation exists within space and time, right? So, every object is attacked by time. Over years, every object, whether it is it's a living being, it's subject to death, birth and death. If it is a non-living being, it will anyway, it is perishable in nature, right? Now, so that perishability, fragility is the intrinsic nature of the entire creation consisting of things, beings, situations, relationships, etc. So, there is no permanent object, person, situation, right, or relationship. So, since the whole world is perishable, it can never give me lasting security or support. Now, this is the differentiation between impermanent and permanent. Understanding that there is an eternal thing and an ephemeral thing, right? That is Vivekaha or discrimination. The world can give us entertainment, right? It is very beautiful. It has variety. It has novelty. But it cannot give us peace and security because relationships are changing. Leaning on something which is not permanent is very risky, right? It can just, one day it can disappear. Something can happen to the relationship. Something can happen to love. Something can happen to your relatives, your near and dear, right? So the world can give entertainment. It can give us education. It can give us opportunity. But God, the only Nitya Vastu, is the only one which can give us peace, happiness and security. This understanding is called Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha, right? Now, God, Brahman alone can give permanent security and support. World can give us only entertainment, transactions and varieties. So, what Tattvabodha says is Nitya Vastu Ekam Brahma. Tad Vyatiriktam Sarvam Anityam. Ayameva Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha. Basically, discerning that there is impermanent and permanent things and ability to discern that is Vivekaha. That's the first one. Second one is Viragaha or dispassion. Very closely related to the first one. Because only if you discern, you will be able to be dispassionate, right? Passion is clinging to the world for security and support. Opposite of that is dispassion or Viragaha, right? So, it is said that Iha Swarga Bogeshu, that means the absence of desire for any type of enjoyment in this world or the heavens. Iha and Swarga. Iha Swarga Bogeshu Icha Rahityam Viragaha. Viragaha is absence of desire for any type of enjoyment in this world or the heavens, right? Freedom from all types of sensory slavery. Adharmic things obviously to be avoided. Dharmic in moderation, right? So, the first thing that is suggested is give up addiction to adharmic thing by developing addiction to dharma. So, first develop good addiction to get rid of bad addiction. Then, once you have good addiction that is dharma or rituals, even if it is sakama bhakti, it's fine. Then, slowly convert it to nishkama bhakti, right? So, from bad addiction, you move to good addiction, right? So, freedom from all types of emotional hooks. Freedom means mastery, right? Basically. And dispassion does not mean controlling or forcefully suppressing the desires. You should naturally develop an attitude that will make you get out of this passion or attachment. That is Viragaha. Like Swamiji gives the example of, as a child, you want to, you know, go after the balloons. But as you grow older, nobody asks for these balloons. So like that, you must be able to develop a dispassion or Viragaha towards worldly things or worldly attachment. So this is the second aspect, which is Viragaha or dispassion. Now, the third one is Shamadi Shatka Sampatti. Samadhi Shatka Sampatti is sixfold discipline. Shatka, Shatka Sampatti means sixfold discipline. Shama Adi, the first one is Shama, right? Shamaha is thought discipline and closely related to that is Damaha, sense control. Why are both of these related? Because sense organs are kind of doors to your mind. Now, if the doors are open, everything will go in, right? So, thought control is very, very difficult if sense control is not there. And Swamiji gives this famous example of try not, if you're a coffee addict, try not having coffee in the morning. Now, if you are able to sit with a set of people having coffee and then control, right, your mind not to have coffee, that is even greater than not going in the company of people having coffee at all. Because once you don't see the coffee, it is a lot easier to control your mind because your sense organs don't smell the coffee. But if you're sitting in company of people who are having that cup of coffee, then you are controlling your sense organs and you're controlling your mind, right? So, Shamaha is thought discipline. Damaha is sense control. And Damaha is definitely a prerequisite for Shamaha because otherwise it becomes very, very difficult in the initial stages. Once you have crossed, you know, a certain level of, you know, meditation, practice and all that, maybe it's okay, but otherwise, sensory organs are the first one to handle before you handle the mind, right? Uparamaha is the third one, which is withdrawal or quietude, right? And samnyasa and swadharma anushtanam. Uparamaha is nothing but withdrawal or quietude, right? You want to sit and spend some time within yourself, focusing on yourself. This comes by doing swadharma anushtanam, your nitya naimittika karmas, your daily puja, etc. when you do, right? You sit quiet for some quality time without doing anything else outside and you are able to focus on the teaching. So, uparamaha becomes very, very important for scriptural learning. Titiksha is the fourth one, which is endurance or forbearance, right? Because only if you increase the patience or your immunity or resistance power, both physically and mentally, because you can't have a short fuse. You should be able to withstand, you know, certain things may not happen your way, right? You should still be able to maintain the calm and composure. So, working on this value through meditation will help you develop endurance and forbearance. That is Titiksha, which is the fourth one. The fifth one is Shraddha, faith in scriptures. The fifth one is faith in scriptures because without faith in scriptures, you cannot pursue Vedanta as just an academic study. It will not help you in any way. And the sixth one is Samadhanam, which is improving your concentration or focusing power. So all these six, Samadhi, Shatka, Sampatti are very, very important for Sadhana Chatushtayam. This is the most important aspect of Sadhana Chatushtayam. And Sadhana Chatushtayam is required as preparatory discipline for your scriptural pursuit, right? So, the fourth one obviously is Mokshutvam, an intense and burning desire for moksha, right? And the benefits of this is, they say, satisfaction of the natural curiosity. Who is God? Who created this world? Who am I? All the answers you will get out of this. And gaining knowledge-driven happiness or inner peace. Vidyananda Praptihi is the second benefit which you get out of moksha. And the third one is Karpanya Nivrittihi, freedom from desperation, right? Freedom from shock, Agata Nivrittihi, trauma, and gaining efficiency in whatever you do. Now, if you know that these are the benefits and you have an intense desire for moksha, your fourth Sadhana Chatushtayam is satisfied, right? So, first, the four D's as we call it, right? Vivekaha, Viragaha, Samadhi Shatka Sampatti and Mumukshutvam. So, four D's if you feel is easier to remember, then you can say discrimination, right? Dispassion, desire for moksha and discipline. That is the four D's. Discrimination, dispassion, desire for moksha and discipline, right? So, these are the Sadhana Chatushtayam. Now, sadhana chatushtayam is a prerequisite for shravanam. For jnana yoga itself, it's a prerequisite, right? So, while we start our studies, we need to work on these four if we need to be able to assimilate the knowledge better, right? And for developing sadhana chatushtayam, karma yoga helps in acquiring discrimination, dispassion and desire for moksha. Upasana yoga helps in acquiring samadhi shatka sampatti, right? And a life of moral values is extremely important for cultivating sadhana chatushtayam, right? Very, very important. And Swamiji has actually put together 10 commandments of Hinduism for ethical and moral values. So I have listed these, and 10 commandments of Hinduism do not as well as do. It's self-explanatory. So I will stop here. It's there in the slide. You can take a look at the do's and don'ts, right? And I will just consolidate before I take questions. So, karma yoga and upasana yoga makes one fit for jnana yoga, jnana yogyata prapti. And jnana yogyata gives you jnanam through jnana yoga. Veda purva bhaga deals with jnana yogyata prapti through karma yoga and upasana yoga. This portion is called Veda purva or karma kanda, otherwise called the religious portion. And Veda Anta Bhaga deals with Jnana Prapti, the attainment of Jnanam through Jnana Yoga. Right? Is this clear? This is the consolidation of what we have learned so far. Now, in the next class, I would actually be stepping into the proper, you know, the text itself, Tattva Bodha, and we will go into, you know, the different layers, Shariratrayam, etc. Right? So, now we can have questions, right? And yeah, bhakti yoga runs in and through all of the above. As I said, we can have questions now. Let me first take the questions in the sheet here. Some people have asked. Yeah. Yeah. Is bhakti yoga according to Advaita merging with Brahman or individual devotion to a personal god like Vishishta Advaita? Now, in bhakti yoga, we only talk about God, right? We don't talk beyond God except in the sense of Arupa Ishvara. We call in bhakti yoga the highest form of bhakti as Arupa Ishvara Bhakti. Now, in Advaita Vedanta, through Jnana Prapti, we are talking about Jiva Ishvara Aikyam and the Atma being essentially the same. We will come to it when we do Jiva Ishvara Aikyam. So, there Arupa Ishvara and Paramatma, Jivatma, Atma, Aikyam, all of these come together. We will see that at that time. Right? Please, could you tell us how to love God as self? The very process of not able to read the full question. I think it must have got answered by now. Could you tell us how to love God as self, right?
The very process of doing it.
Okay. Basically, God as self is you worship God as yourself, right? Because essentially, God and you are the same. When you go into Uttama Bhakti and you go into the highest arupa form of bhakti, you start worshipping God as yourself because Atma is essentially the same behind God, you, right, and the all-pervading Atma. That is the reason. When we come there, this will get explained. I will again revisit some of these concepts at that time. Without doing Veda Purva, I am jumping into Veda Anta part. Is this correct? What is the last part, Soumya? I can't see that. Is this okay? Okay. Now, we need to when you say, I haven't done the Veda Purva part, let us analyze it in two parts. One is study of the scriptures. Second is doing the rituals. If you have been a religious person in life, right, you would have definitely undertaken prayers, puja, parayanam, etc. That is sufficient for you to embark on Veda Anta Bhaga. You need not learn the Veda Purva Bhaga or, you know, the Brahmana, Samhitas, etc. That is left to the priest to do that. So as long as you have done rituals, you have been praying in the house, in whatever form that you have been undertaking puja, parayanam, etc., that is fine. You can embark on a Vedantic journey, right? But Karma Yoga is the one that will give you Chitta Shuddhi. So it, everyone's personal journey is very different. So you need to measure where you are on FIR reduction, triple C, etc., and see how much of Chitta Shuddhi you have gained or not gained through the practice or not practicing Karma Yoga. Okay, will not the intensity of desire for goal naturally take the third place since the goals come from unseen Ishwara as a result of past actions and we realize the non-relationship between the current. Okay, now when I was speaking about the desire for the goal, etc., we are talking of a normal individual, right, who is not exposed to the teachings. So the normal tendency is to have a desire for the goal, the end goal, right? Now Karma Yoga itself tells you that you enjoy the action, have Ishwara Arpana Bhava, take the result as Ishwara Prasada. Now that is much later, which comes as a learning. So you got it right on that part of it, right? So the second part of it is always our result is, our the end result is a result of two factors, as I said. One is the law of karma operating and the second is the free will that is influencing the agami karma. So we are taking effort, we are taking prayatnam and doing something. That as well as the prarabdha karma together results in the result. Okay, am I missing any other questions, Soumya?
There is one question. This, do you do that? In Shaiva Siddhanta,
God is presented as, okay, Urvam, Aruvam and
Uruvaruvam.
And Sarupa and Arupa and the third is in between, Linga Rupam. Yeah, Linga Rupam is also God as, okay, I think I did not mention in Eka Rupa and Aneka Rupa, Linga Rupa and all other forms of God are covered under that. Between in Eka Rupa as well as Aneka Rupa. So, in Aneka Rupa, all of these come. So, it is not that Linga Rupam has been missed out. I think I missed mentioning that even Lingam or any other form, even if you pray God, worship God in the form of a tree or in the form of a child, all of those come under Aneka Rupa Ishwara. Is there any other question? Should we look at the...
Is Nishkama Karma a prerequisite in all yogas, despite it being practically hard to follow?
It is, okay, let me put it this way. It is not a prerequisite for you to start either Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga, but you the Chitta Shuddhi will come only with Nishkama Bhakti, Nishkama Karma. So what happens is, as you start progressing, that's why I put that 3x3 matrix, because I was not sure whether it appealed to the people, but I just wanted to make sure I put it there. You will get to Uttama Karmani or Nishkama Karmani only much later. It's a long journey, 15, 20 years. But only when you get to that stage, your mind gets refined, you get Chitta Shuddhi and you are able to absorb the abstract concepts of Nirguna Brahman and actually work towards Vedantic meditation and Aikyam. So therefore, while it is not a prerequisite for starting a journey, definitely it is a prerequisite for attaining moksha. At least you because what happens is your mental refinement will come only with nishkama bhakti or nishkama karma.
Is Upasana Yoga and Raja Yoga the same?
Yeah. See, Upasana Yoga is a broad term used to represent any form of meditation where I talked about all these meditations. So, Raja Yoga will definitely come under Upasana Yoga, but I am not sure whether Upasana Yoga, it can be synonyms. Because Upasana Yoga actually goes through a wide range of, yogas. As I said, it's a value meditation, you have a concentration meditation, you have Vedantic meditation. So, Upasana can be Manasa Puja, any of these, right? So, therefore, and I'm not an expert on Raja Yoga, so I can't comment beyond that. Is there any other question?
I think that we can
just go. Okay, let me. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.